Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and we're getting musical and cabaretical here on this Sunday evening, and very happy to have someone who's gotten into cabaret at a stage in life when people are kind of, well, I don't want to be cruel and say people are checking out of things in general, but and I'm looking at him right now, and his eyes are narrowing, and he's going, okay.
So I'm not checking out of anything right now, no.
God willing, thank God for that. Person in the studio with me. At WGBB, made his debut as a cabaret performer at age 72, but was not his first taste of the music world, of songwriting, of, he's done Broadway stuff, he's done cabaret and regional stuff, he's written songs for the likes of people, everyone from Louis Armstrong has covered his material, to, I had a list of Jimmy Durante, Peggy Lee, Karen Akers. And we'll talk a bit about Michael Feinstein as well. But
sure.
Is it Weinstein or Feinstein?
Feinstein.
Feinstein, sorry.
Feinstein. Yes.
I've got Ray Jessel in the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Ray Jessel, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank
welcome
you,
to the
Dave.
Neighborhood. So let's roll it back just to, towards the latest stuff there, where you're 72 years old, and you're thinking, I think I'm going to get up on stage and do my songs.
Mm-hmm.
How did that, why?
How did that happen and why? Well, I'd had a career before that in as a writer in television, a comedy writer, and I'd written songs occasionally through that period. I was getting back into writing music, writing songs, and going through the very long and difficult process of making demos of songs and sending out to songwriters, and it was kind of frustrating. And actually, Michael Feinstein, who you mentioned, heard some of my comedy songs, which I would do at parties for friends, you know, things like that. And he asked if he could do them in his act, and I said, sure. And after a while, he said, you know, Ray, I'm getting laps with these songs, but really, you should be out there performing them yourself. He said, there's nobody doing anything like that anymore, you know. Tom Lehrer doesn't perform anymore.
Hasn't for 30 years.
Alan Sherman has passed away from us, and so there's nobody.
Well, I mean, you've got Weird Al Yankovic, but
it's different. There's some people were close, but basically there's not. Certainly there's not many, if there are any people doing comedy and music. So he encouraged me, and at the time I didn't have enough songs to make an evening, but I set about that, and when I had enough to make a show, I asked the owner of the Gardenia, which is the cabaret club in Los Angeles, if I could have a night and do a show, and that's when I started.
Cool. And you felt it went well in the audience?
It went very well, and the audience responded very well. And
it was just you at a piano, or were there...
Me at the piano, that's it. And as a matter of fact, about 6 months later, I made this CD, and my CD is called Ray Jessel, The First 70 Years...
Mm-hmm.
And that was a live performance at the Gardenia.
And these are all recent or fairly recent songs, or do they span back?
Some of them span, a couple of them span back a few years, but many of them were within the 6 months that, let's say, before I started performing. You know,
right. But you were writing songs.
When
did you start that?
Well. I started out my career as an arranger and orchestrator, and I met a very talented woman in Toronto, in Canada, by the name of Marion Grudeff, and she was the music director for an annual satirical review. And she was a concert pianist, and she loved classical music, and I was a classical composer, making a living as an orchestrator, she was an enthusiast of the American Songbook, and she was the one who really started me interested in getting me interested in songs as such. So we started writing songs together.
What was the name of the review?
Spring Thaw, it was called.
Okay.
On the spring, and then Marion and I developed a musical that eventually was heard by a Broadway producer, Alexander Cohen, and he signed us up to write the show called Baker Street. Which is Sherlock Holmes musical, which ran for about 10 months or so in.
So it was almost a hit.
1965, a semi, I would say, a semi hit. Yeah, in 65, and during that period, we were also writing songs for other performers. You know, in fact, the show we did after Baker Street, which was a show which didn't actually come into Broadway, closed out of town, was a remake of the old Hell's a Poppin'. And we did the songs for that.
Was that the one Jerry Lewis was supposed to be in?
Or well, there were two of them. We did the one that Soupy Sales starred in which was before the Jerry Lewis one.
Okay, yeah.
And it played in Montreal at the Expo there in 69, I guess it was. 67, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And the title song of that was recorded by Louis Armstrong.
Wow.
Yeah, which was great, you know. And Jimmy Durante, as a matter of fact, yeah. And so I've always been writing songs, and then having done a show which was only a semi-success, and then a couple of shows which closed out of town, I realized if you had a hit, you could make a killing on Broadway, but you couldn't make a living.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when I went out to Hollywood. And some of my friends were already working there as writers on variety shows. As they had a lot of variety shows at that time, at the end of, 1970 or so.
Sure.
And started working on, I got picked up to do the Dean Martin show. And
but not music, you were actually...
No, changed hats and became a comedy writer.
Wow.
Occasionally, when I got a chance, I would do some music things. If a show needed a song, I was able to do that. And
you were up for the Dean Martin show?
Yeah. I went out to do, I did the summer show that was produced by the Dean Martin operation. It was called The Gold Diggers. I expected to do musical material, but they had somebody doing that. So I changed the sketches.
Interstitial sketches
and wisecracks or whatever. And
cool.
And then
what was your favorite sketch that you either wrote or contributed to?
Well, the one I think the best sketch I think was one I did for when I was on the Carol Burnett show.
Whoa! Okay.
And there was one called the Pail. And it was a thing for Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman, in which Carol is coming to visit the psychiatrist and find the reason for her psychiatric problems nowadays. Uh-huh. And they discover it all stems back to a time when she was on the beach as a little girl and some big fat kid came over and stole her pail. And it turns out that the big fat kid was Harvey Korman. So anyway, then the sketch builds, and that's one of the I think that's one of the best sketches. It was certainly one of the best performances, anyway.
And it was wonderful. So I've got a sidetrack here. So what was it like writing for the Carol Burnett show? I mean, what was a week like?
The Carol Burnett show, unlike some others I worked on, was a very organized, very business-like show. And there were some very, very talented writers on the show. Well, Barry Levinson, who became an important producer, was one of the writers on the show.
Director.
We would come up with sketches and run the ideas by the head writer and by Carol, and if they liked it, then we would go ahead and write the things. And hopefully that would get into the... into the show, you know.
And how long were you doing that there?
On Carol Burnett?
Yeah.
I did that for just one season.
Oh, okay.
I did one because I was moving on to other things. I went on to be a head writer on another show, on a Rich Little show, actually.
Oh, my gosh. The Rich Little comedy.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I vaguely remember.
Yeah. There were a lot of variety shows. I guess I did most of them. I was a head writer on the last, probably the last variety show, which was The Captain and Tennille.
Oh, my. I do remember that.
The wonderful thing about variety in those days, and writing for variety, the wonderful thing was that they all had star guests on the show, and you got to write for everybody who was anybody. I mean, I've written jokes for Bob Hope, I've written jokes for Groucho Marx.
What joke did you write for Groucho Marx?
Oh, well, gosh, let me think. There was supposed to be an interview between him and Bill Cosby. It was a Bill Cosby variety show, they called Cos, and they were supposed to be discussing the economy. That was the idea. And Cosby asks him, what do you think about the unemployment situation? And he says, well, And Crochet says, well, I know a lot about it. Parts of my body have been unemployed for years.
As a Groucho.
Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah, so it was wonderful to hear a Groucho say your line. It was amazing.
Did you even get to meet him, or you literally just...
Very briefly. Well, at that time, he was
old, yeah.
Oh, he was in and out of it, you know. He was sometimes in and out of it a lot. So we sort of met him, but he wouldn't remember me or anything like that.
Well, no.
But you met everybody. I mean, we worked with Gene Kelly, and, you know, I mean, no, it was great. Going back to music, though, I was on the Love Boat for a number of years, and I did persuade them to do a musical version of the Love Boat. And what was great about that for a songwriter was I did four original songs for the show, including the finale. Was that the guest stars for that musical
Merman.
Ethel Merman, Carol Channing, Ann Miller, Van Johnson.
Oh my gosh.
Cab Calloway, Della Reese, plus the usual Love Boat staff.
Yeah, well,
but to have them all singing your song.
I want
to
hear Fred Grandy do this. No.
Well, it was, you know, that was it. I mean, they did a song. It was a song called Wanna Sing a Show Tune, which years later, actually, I played for Michael Feinstein, and he used it as his opener in his act for quite a few years. That one song.
So why didn't you stop writing for TV?
I guess they stopped using me. In other words, there's a huge amount of ageism in TV. Today, if you're over 30, forget it, you know, as a writer. And so in many ways, I kind of say that I wrote posthumously. Remember, I was lucky. I wrote...
You were in there in the 40s.
40s and 50s, yeah. So at 60, 70, you know. The last show we did, we wrote actually a season for Shari Lewis. We're writing songs for Hush Puppy and...
And Lamb Chop.
And Lamb Chop, and that was fun, but she passed away,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I guess that was it. And so the opportunities to get hired, unless people you knew were going to be developing a show, they weren't going to hire you. It became that way. And so essentially I went back to writing songs,
right,
which is my first love anyway. And then we come around to where I was before, you know. Yeah. So that's basically it. Hi, this is Ray Jessel, songwriter. I'm here with Dave on the show aptly called Dave's Gone By at WGBB.
Do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
Oh, God. Wait a minute. Hold on. They tell me this, and I don't know for sure, but my older sister's name was Vivian, called Vivi. And it seems that I wrote... You can see me, I can see you, but you can't see Vivi, because she's gone to school.
You were pretty young.
Talented, huh?
Yeah. How old were you?
I don't know, 4 or something. 23.
There you go. We are talking with Ray Jessel, ladies and gentlemen, songwriter, singer, TV comedy writer for a long period of time. Now, I do want to also still talk a little bit more about the process of putting together a Broadway musical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a little surprised at Baker Street. I assumed it was like a respected flop, not the fact that it was kind of a near hit. I didn't realize it ran that long. So, so that was sort of pretty heartening in the sense. At least it wasn't like them swatting you down immediately and saying, oh, well, you're out of here.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's... Well, it's like a lot of things in life. It's getting that second one, which is the hard one.
Hmm.
The one that worked. I mean, we did, as I say, a couple of shows after that didn't get anywhere. And that's disheartening. But no, it was...
Let's take it, though, from the beginning. You decided to write this musical. You weren't
commissioned. I should back...
Sure.
Go back up, and I'll explain exactly. We were involved with BMI, and BMI had started a theater department because most of the theater musicians were ASCAP up to that time.
Uh-huh.
So they had us develop an audition score that wasn't just cabaret songs, individual cabaret, but would have a storyline plus a half a dozen songs to give an example of what we could write.
Okay.
And we picked the subject of P.T. Barnum. And what we wrote was a Barnum score, not the one that finally got to Broadway. There was a show called Barnum.
Right. That was Cy Coleman.
Yeah. But we did the score and on that, and there were pretty good songs in it. And we got Alex Cohen, through friends, to come and listen to the stuff. And luckily for us, I think that was part of it anyway, Alex Cohen fancied himself as the P.T. Barnum of today, you know. Anyway, it was like a Hollywood movie. We played the songs for him, and we walked out of there with a Broadway contract.
Wow! To write different songs, not to squeeze them in.
To expand that show, Barnum.
Oh.
And we spent the next couple of years going around trying to find a book writer, the writer for the libretto.
Yeah.
That Alex and we would like, and we liked everybody, and Alex liked none of them.
Yeah.
So. All right. Meanwhile, he had the reverse problem with another project, and that project was Baker Street.
Hmm.
He had signed up this show, Baker Street, and the libretto was serviceable, but the songs were so-so, and he couldn't get them either to rewrite the songs sufficiently, and also he couldn't get directors or choreographers who would do the show. They said, just dump that score, you know. So we were brought in at first to interpolate some songs in the score, and then eventually the director at that time, there were three directors we worked with, but that director said, Give the kids the show, like,
cool.
To do the song. So that's how we got to do the Baker Street score.
Right.
And then we worked with Michael Langham, was the first director. He was a British guy. Yeah. And then he had, then because of timing difficulties, he had other commitments. He left the show, and we worked for a while with Josh Logan.
Wow.
And that was something. And we had a great time with Josh Logan. Developing the show, and but all of a sudden Josh was gone because Josh, as you know, suffered from manic depression, severe manic depression, and he got into one of his depressive moods, and he left the show, and so we were looking around for another director, and that's how Hal Prince came to direct the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Hal was looking to be, he'd been a producer, but he wanted to be hired as a director to do the show. And he came in, and that was terrific in some ways, and not so terrific in others.
Because he wanted to imprint his thing on everything.
Yeah.
Do you think he spoiled the show?
In some ways.
Why? What did he do? What did he do?
Well, I don't know whether all of it can be blamed on him. One of the things was that it was not really a huge show, but it was put in a huge theater, so it had to be spectacular. And there were some spectacular things about it. Oliver Smith won a Tony for the sets and things. They were incredible, I must say. And the other thing, though, where we came to blows almost, was that he said, well, it's an adventure. It's a fact, we cannot stop for the usual applause after musical numbers. We got to just keep running on and things like that. And that was a big mistake because the audience wanted to applaud and didn't. And we were furious, but we were the new kids on the block and he was the heavyweight. So, you know, so there were frustrations, too.
But when you got through, like, opening night or the first week, and you looked at the show objectively. Did it work or did it not work? Or was it in the middle?
It worked pretty well, but there were some problems still, we thought. There was a song that never quite worked. The first song for the woman in the show. And that song never worked, and there was a new song put in, and that never worked either. Many years later, that's about 5 or 6 years ago, the show was redone, was put on in a stage reading at the York Theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Little York Theater there. And we wrote a new song for that spot, and it worked like a charm. 35 years too late.
but again, it wasn't this over. It wasn't a 2-week closing flop.
No, not at all. No, it wasn't really over. It was a nice. It was an interesting and nice show. Yeah.
Inga Swenson
was the played the woman for it. Yeah.
But then after that show, when you went scouting around for a second one.
Yeah.
I mean, they run up to you and say, okay, we've got this property, or...
Well, yes, in a sense, people did come to us with ideas for properties and things, and a number of them we didn't like. But one that came to us was Jerry Weidman, who had written the libretto for Fiorello, among other things, wanted to do National Velvet.
Okay.
And...
People in horse costumes, or
well, I don't know. We always thought, well, you could get by the horse situation by if you had the races, that the same way they did in the Ascot Gavotte, and if you have people looking out towards the station, things that way.
Yeah, but that's just a minor part.
I know. And you, but you might have to have a horse on the stage somewhere or other in the horse box. Well, that you're actually exactly the nail on the head. We thought, well, we were saying, well, okay, that's it's a big standard, and here we have a name writer, and he wants to use us, and so we wrote several songs on spec, and we all went around to David Merrick, and we went in, and he said,
are you people crazy?
Are you crazy? What are we going to do with the horses?
I mean, it's bad enough in Annie. I mean, the dogs misbehave and I know, exactly.
So, but I give that as a for example, yeah. You know. And with the Hell's a Poppin' thing, well, yeah, there was a chance it would be a crazy show in which we would essentially write interlude songs, you know, songs which had nothing to do with they'd be craziness. It would be like a Marx Brothers film, and then a song would come up as a relief from the comedy things. Except some of the songs we did a song called The Airstrip, which was a kind of a sexy number. It was a dance number.
And you performed
Airstrip,
that,
yeah. I performed that. Yeah, no, but and the opening number, Hell's a Poppin', but then, and things like that. It was more like a review.
Well, you didn't make it like to New York because...
But, well, I don't know whether I heard that Alice Cohen, they couldn't raise the money.
Oh, well, that happened.
George Abbott was directing the thing, so I got to work with George Abbott, which was wonderful.
Was he the genius that everybody said he was?
Oh, yeah. He was very quiet and very efficient, and... I believe he was 82 at the time then, and he used to walk between the offices and the rehearsal hall, and I couldn't keep up with him. It was like...
Well, he was active until like his late 90s. He was still doing...
Until his hundreds. He was 104 or something. Was still doing things. And he was very, very bright, you know.
And then you did do, I think... part of I Remember Mama?
Yes.
That was a Broadway show.
That was later. I was out in Hollywood. I was working on staff at the Love Boat as a writer there. And I get this call from Alex Cohn, be in New York tomorrow. And I say, why? He says, because if you are, you have a shot at writing with Richard Rodgers. So I immediately called the airlines, and I immediately told the Love Boat people, you got to give me leave of absence here, you know.
Wow.
So I flew into, what was it, Philadelphia, I guess it was, so that they were out of town with the show.
Yeah.
And they'd run...
Oh, I was wondering why it had to be the next day.
Yeah, it was Marty Charnin, who had been the lyricist... Mm-hmm. of the show, and...
Charlie, best known, of course, for doing Annie.
Annie.
Right.
And he had been the director of the show, and there had been a falling out between him and Rodgers and Cohen and things, because they wanted songs changed, and he wasn't about to change them or about to do them. I think that was basically it, anyway.
So Charlie wanted new Rodgers, or some different... And Rodgers was saying, no, I'm Richard Rodgers.
Yes, that's right. So... essentially, then Charnin had left, so they had to find. In fact, they had to find a new lyricist and a new director.
Oh my gosh!
So I came in you know, to as a possible lyricist. I guess Alex had played him the Baker Street score, and he liked that, it seems. And so I got the job, which was
as amazing. A lyricist.
As a lyricist,
being written musically by Richard Rodgers.
That's right.
You got to write songs with Richard Rodgers.
That's right. Yes, they ended up with about 4 of them in the actual show. Although we wrote a lot more than that. We wrote songs which would go in, and then they would try them, and it didn't work, and then they would go out, and all that things.
What was it like working with him?
Well, first of all, he was quite sick at that time. I mean, in the sense that he was suffering, he had cancer of the jaw, and he spoke through a voice box, you know. So that was made it a little bit difficult. But on the whole, it was very good. What happened was... I would write the lyric first. This is the way he liked to work. With Hammerstein, anyway, that's the way he worked. So I would write a lyric, and then he would call me over when he had the tune, and I would come with the tune. He plays this tune for me on this particular song, and I'm playing it down, because, you know, I can play piano and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, and I get to one point in it, and I kind of turn a little ashen and a little gray, because it's not right. It's not working. And I turn to him and I say, I don't believe that I am saying this to Richard Rodgers. And he says, oh, forget all that crap. You know, what?
You're working, you're what? Working.
What? Yeah. What? It was so great. So I said, how about this? Yeah, no. And then I said, well, how about this? Yeah, that's it. And from then on, we were just fine. We had a good time.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
That is great. And I have to say... When you and Rodgers were working on this, and you looked at each other and said, who's going to play? And they said, Liv Ullmann. You must have looked at each other and gone, what? Or...
Well, that was already decided by the time I got
there.
I mean, I think that was one of the things about how the show got on, because they thought, oh, my God, who's going to play a Norwegian woman? Well, Liv Ullmann. It sounds right. Actually, I think Liv Ullmann was the problem in the end. Not even Martin Charney.
Was she sing? I'm not familiar with the
semi. Semi, but she was very uncomfortable in the whole situation. She couldn't handle the changes that were being thrown at her all the time, which you have to be able to do. And the other members of the cast, I mean, George Hearn was fabulous.
Sure.
He was wonderful.
Did you ever go through the hell of being out of town with a musical and rewriting from... You know, 11:30 at night.
Oh yeah. Well, with Baker Street, we were in Toronto, which because Alex had connections with the theater there, and so we that was one tryout town, and then we were in Boston, and all the time there we were rewriting.
So is that what happens? You do the show at night, like 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Curtain comes down at 10.
Down, and then you get notes from the director and what's working, what's not working, and which there might be notes generally for the cast. And then you have a meeting, generally, with the director and the producer, possibly, and...
At, like, 11:30 at night.
Yeah, or they might say, well, this is late, and we'll meet the first thing in the morning or something, you know, but...
And then when do you get to make changes? I mean, you have to change a song or write a new song.
Yeah, you have to write a new song, like, overnight, hopefully.
Well, it is overnight, because you're waking up.
Yeah, well, the next day or so, next day, maybe a day or two.
And so it's, like, about a two-day lag between...
Yeah.
Right, so then the cast has
to learn it. Somebody has to make at least a dummy orchestration.
Right. Wow.
So there was, you know.
Did you enjoy that, or was it too stressful? Was it just, oh God?
I found it more stressful at Baker Street. It was our first show, and in a way, it had been our baby, and we weren't happy to do the changes. I was in the reverse position coming in on I Remember Mama, and that was my job, was to make changes there. So I wasn't
knew.
Coming. It wasn't something I was wedded to anything, so I could be a little more objective, and I could just do my task. Although there were panic moments when I'm not thinking of anything. This is no good. This is not going to work, and I've got to have it by tomorrow, you know.
Television for this? Or, well, this is actually... But, wow.
But actually, the television experience was very useful there, because I was often in situations there where I had to come up with something right away, you know, for that night's taping, you know. Because some piece or other had fallen out, and, you know, you needed something else.
Yeah. We're talking with Ray Jessel, who is just having a fabulous time talking with Ray Jessel about his years in TV, years writing for Broadway, and also want to remind folks that you can get his album, Ray Jessel, the First 70 Years, from LML Music. Do you have a website? Is there a place where people can go to?
Well, we have one, but it's not that organized yet.
Okay, but if people want to buy your CD,
you can go to LML Music, or they can get it on Amazon. The record there, or you can go. You can come to my website, which is very simple: Ray Jessel at.
Well, that's your email address.
My email is www.rayjessel.com.
And that's J-E-S-S-E-L, one single L.
Yeah.
They took the other L for LML Music, apparently.
That's right.
And I might as well ask, since we're talking a little bit before about celebrities and people that you've worked with, famous people.
Yeah.
Maude Maggart is featured fairly prominently on the
She's a dear friend, and I just think the world of her. She's just incredible, incredible singer.
I mean, I just remember, like, a couple of years ago, I'd see the name, and then I'd, oh, it's Fiona Apple's sister, she's doing, and now she's sort of the cabaret name. What, she's really gotten up there.
Yes, she has. I think she's going to be back at the Algonquin in February, I think, again.
So she sings a couple of songs like Please Don't Let It Be Love, mm-hmm. I'm Out of Here, and Moonlight. I assume most of the songs, if not all, are comical in nature.
Those aren't. I mean, I would say two-thirds of the songs are comical, at least of the ones that I sing. In fact, Maude used to guest on my shows when we were in the same town at the same time.
Okay.
And would sing the songs that I couldn't sing. In other words, the songs that really needed a real voice. For example, Moonlight, you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That is, that's our lyrics to Claude Debussy's Clair de Lune.
I think I'd rather hear more to it.
There you know, you get the idea. See, yeah. That's why I didn't do that. And Please Don't Let Me Love is a song from a musical in progress, a work in progress.
Uh-huh.
When I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I, Cynthia Thompson. We work on the lyrics together on the serious stuff, and I
How
do the music.
How long have you been married?
Oh my gosh, it's we've been together. Let's put it that way. We've been together for 26 years.
Oh, that's not so okay. Yeah, I know. I thought you said 40, 50 years. You know,
no, since 1980, and I guess we got married maybe 10 years later than that. So I guess
cool.
Figure that. And
and is she a professional songwriter or?
Well, she is now. Going briefly through her career, she started out as a location manager for television,
okay,
and then became a TV writer, and then she and I collaborated as TV writers on various things.
Oh.
Like we wrote many scripts for The Love Boat together. She's much better at story than I am, for example.
You're the joke person.
I'm the joke person. She did the story thing.
Okay.
That's what we're getting. And then we started writing songs together. And this particular thing is from a musical version of Daniel Defoe's Small Flanders.
Never read it. I've heard of it.
Good read. Good read. Real good read. And so anyway, that's one of the songs from it, Please Don't Let It Be Love, and Maude sings it just beautifully.
You were in TV all those years, and since you've been mm-hmm. doing the music and stuff like that, we've run through names like Louis Armstrong, Durante, Pink. I mean, give me some anecdotes, give me some things about these people you've met, good or bad.
Oh, well,
memory.
I guess my most memorable experience, and I was telling you about being under the gun when you had to write something suddenly. I was working on the Captain and Tennille show, okay, and
so what's Tony Tennille really like? No.
Tony Tennille's very, very nice.
Okay.
They both were. They had a time, there was a show, and it was all set and all the rest of it, and one of the guests couldn't appear for some reason, so they managed to get, somebody found out that Muhammad Ali was in town.
Ooh, yeah.
And they would try and get him. So they got him. And Muhammad Ali, and they turned to me and said, well, we got to have something for Muhammad to do.
Yeah.
So I'm on the spot. He's going to be taping it that afternoon.
That afternoon.
So So they're looking at and I'm saying, I'll come up with, anyway, I figured out that, well, okay, he likes to do rhymes.
It should rhyme, of course.
It's a rhymes. That's one obvious thing.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll think of the show as if it were a fight and he's the commentator. And he'll do a rhyme commentating on the rounds of the show. Like after each bit, he'll say, this is round two, and da-da-da, and he'll make a little rhyme about it, you know. So that's my idea. That's when, and so I wrote up enough rhymes to and that they would tape them all together and then they would edit them into the show. Okay. So I get to the crucial moment when I have to show this stuff to Muhammad Ali, and if he doesn't like them, we're up the creek. That's right.
Yeah.
So I go into this room where he sits with about four or five of his retinue.
Muhammad Ali.
Oh, right? Yeah. And there are all these huge guys, things that are all inside that door there. And I go in handing this thing. And he says, what you got? And I give him this paper, and he looks through there, and you've never seen more trembling. I'm sitting there like this, and after a while, he looks over to the other guys and says, he ain't as dumb as he looks. And I knew we were all right. I was like,
you.
So that was that was memorable for me, at least, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, even when he put out his hand to get the paper, the size of this hand,
right.
I can imagine what it's like inside a glove, but even the hand is the size of a huge T-bone steak, you know.
Gosh.
You know.
That is a great story. How about a couple of others? Come on. Do you have any celebrities that you wouldn't spit on if they looked at you? I mean,
that were difficult?
Yeah.
The only really difficult one that I really disliked, I'm sorry to say, because we should speak well of the dead, was Sonny Bono.
You're kidding me.
Oh, yeah, he was...
Sonny?
Yes. I was a co-producer, anyway, of a summer show, and he was a guest on it. And I don't think he wanted to be a guest on it anyway, and he was just being ridiculously difficult. He, among other things... He wanted to do this medley on his show. It was an arrangement of Try a Little Tenderness. I remember now. But the arrangement was like 10 minutes long, and I had to go to him. I said, we only have a half-hour show.
Yeah, right.
So at the most we can do is cut this thing down to 5 minutes. He says, no way.
And even that's pretty long for us.
That's very long. Yeah. But I said, well, he's, you know, well... I sat down at the piano with the thing there coming, and said, we can cut this. No, you can't cut that. And it was like pulling teeth. It was just awful. It was awful. And that wasn't the only thing. There were a number of other things. Something involving a hat. I can't even remember exactly what it was.
This was after the divorce, I assume? There was no
There wasn't share around. There was some other girlfriend around at that time. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, man.
Quello? Susie Quello? Quello? I think was it. No. Anyway.
So you were kind of, when he ran into that tree, you were kind of jumping for joy a little bit.
Not
serve
really.
Serve him right.
No,
you know.
Not really. I'm not like that, but still. most people who are very gracious. I like Gene Kelly a lot. What a nice man.
And I've only heard good things.
He had a great technique. I noticed that when I walked up to him, and it had been years. I've worked with him on a special soon after I got to Hollywood in like 1970 or so. Years later, I'm working on The Love Boat, and he's a guest on it. And he says, hello, Ray, like that, like not the other thing. And then, which was very nice. And then I realized that he'd, because other people came up to him that he hadn't met before, and say it was, the name was, I don't know, Muriel.
Sure.
He would say, well, hi, Muriel, nice to meet you. So where are you going to now, Muriel? And he would repeat it, and get it into sentences with as much as possible, and that would fix it in his head, and that's a great thing.
Like pure Andrew Carnegie stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Him.
It worked, yeah. He was nice.
Who would you have wanted to really write a song for? It can be someone still living, or someone perhaps not.
Sinatra.
Oh, well, yeah, duh.
Goes without saying.
Never met him, though. Never had him.
Never, well, very, very briefly at the end of his life.
He smacked your wife around or what? No, I
didn't. No, he was, yeah, you know, but I have a friend, Lou Spence, who we've written songs with, and Lou wrote several songs for Sinatra, including, you know, Nice and Easy Does It Every Time.
Wow.
It's one of the songs. There are quite a few other people.
Do you have a favorite song that you've written over the...
A favorite song.
Or maybe one favorite comedy song, a novelty-ish number, and one favorite serious
I guess
Broadway song.
Favorite comedy song, I would think, is the song Life Sucks and Then You Die, which I describe as my Shirley Temple song.
Why would that be your Shirley Temple song?
Oh, because it's in the style of a Shirley Temple. You know, because Shirley Temple did these uplift songs about when you're down and, you know, feeling down.
Well, if you want to perform it together, I can be your Negro.
Oh.
And I'll die you along on the staircase.
That's right. The things are getting
And you're
bad.
Still bi-coastal, so you'll come to New York.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I'm still based, my home is in L.A., and I come to New York. At least last year I came... I guess 4 months out of the year, in 2 month stretches and things. Last August, I was in England doing.
Are you? I was a touch of English in your voice. Are you?
I'm from Wales originally. Yeah, I'm from Cardiff in Wales. Anyway, I was in Edinburgh in Scotland for the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
Which was on in August, and then I did a couple of shows in London. Which was
you're
nice.
Right. You're just not slowing down.
No. Oh. As a matter of fact, there's people now. I'm touching wood here that are working on a tour.
Well, not my wood, hopefully. No.
Working on a tour for me in England, so that may happen in the spring.
Oh well, best of luck with that.
Well, thank you.
I certainly hope people can catch you at Don't Tell Mama and other venues in New York.
Oh,
when you're back
I will be back here. Yeah.
Oh, so Ray Jessel. I'm assuming I'm doing the Gene Kelly thing here.
Yes.
So, Ray Jessel.
Right, absolutely.
Your next goal is to keep doing these cabaret performances. You're working on that musical with your wife. Any other dreams, goals that you're shooting for in the next couple of years?
We have a couple of projects with the aforementioned Michael Feinstein that we're working on. In which Michael will be doing the music and we'll be doing the lyrics.
Terrific.
Things. Can't really go into it more than that, but we're having fun.
Well, it's been tremendous fun talking to Ray Jessel in the neighborhood. Thank you so much, and best of luck.
Thank you, Dave.